If you had this clinic in the United States, there'd be an uproar.
You are listening to Scrubs, Scalpels, and Stories, a podcast about surgeon scientists, the things they care about,
and why it matters to you.
We're not superhuman.
You don't have time to specialize in both things at once.
The more I learned about it, the more I recognized that this needed to be brought to the forefront.
When you get a bad outcome, how do you manage your own emotions?
That feeling that you get when the patients say thank you, that's why I do it.
Join the conversation. This is Scrubs, Scalpels, and Stories. Hi, I'm David for the University of Minnesota Department of Surgery. No money, no insurance, pure medicine. That's how surgeon Todd Tuttle described the experience of taking medical mission trips to Honduras. Dr. Tuttle is a surgical oncologist at the University of Minnesota Department of Surgery. I spoke to him about his ongoing surgical mission to Honduras. But first, have you ever wondered what is on the music playlist in an operating room? What's on Dr. Tuttle's playlist?
It's mostly angry punk.
Whatever helps you do the operation.
That's not unique to Honduras. Most surgeons will have will listen to music in the operating room. I think it helps distract from all the beeping and the buzzing, and it's kind of relaxing. So it's not unique to Honduras. We certainly do it in Honduras as well, and we've got good internet access down there. So we have Spotify. We create playlists. We'll have an Irish day. We'll have Christmas music day. We'll have Bob Marley music. We'll do just about everything.
Whatever helps you do the operation. So let me just start by asking you a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in doing, just describe the trip and kind of why and how you got involved with this initiative in the first place. Because my understanding is you've been doing this for a while.
I have. So I first, maybe about 10 years ago, I was interested in finding a surgical mission trip for the primary reason of showing my daughter, who was going to school in Edina, that Edina is not the world. And I wanted her to see poverty and see people who are in extreme need. And so I was looking for a place, an opportunity to do international surgical work for poor people. And at the time, I had a hard time finding much. Most of the international work was on infectious diseases, handing out antibiotics, blood pressure control, diabetes control. But I eventually found a Honduran physician who worked at Fairview, who had some opportunities in a coastal city in Honduras called La Ceiba. And so that was the first place that we went about 8, 9, 10 years ago. And we went there 3 times and it became very unsafe. We stayed at host families, and several members of the host family were murdered. And so we got out of that situation and then didn't have anything for a while. And then about a year later, a first-year medical student who I usually don't have much interactions with, first-year medical students, emailed me and said, I'd heard about your work in Honduras. I've been going with my family to this orphanage outside Tegucigalpa, and you might be interested. I went seven or eight years ago, to this facility, which was outside the capital, for just several days to see if it would work for our group. And once I saw it, I thought it would be perfect for what I wanted to do, and that's where I've been going ever since.
Tell me a little bit about the place itself. It's near the capital of Honduras, Tegucigalpa, and it's affiliated with the One World Surgery Center, but then also an orphanage, Nuestros Pequeños Hermanos, or Our Little Brothers and Sisters. So tell me a little bit more about this place and what it is that drew you in about this place in particular.
So there's an orthopedic surgeon in St. Paul who was traveling through Central America and was actually visiting a couple of these orphanages in Central America. And there was a young girl there who had a very bad deformity of her legs, and she couldn't walk, and the orthopedic surgeon didn't have any facilities there to treat her. So they brought her up to St. Paul. He and his group worked with her, and she stayed with them for about a year. And then she went back to the orphanage, and a light went off in their heads that maybe we should start a type of surgery center in Honduras. And so they built a surgery center on this orphanage in Honduras. And it doesn't just treat the orphans. In fact, most of the vast majority of the patients are just the community in general. I've loved this situation because you really get a lot of exposure to the people, to the children, and it's been very safe, easy, so much so that I've been able to bring all my family.
What kind of patients, you mentioned that the patients are from the surrounding community, so what kind of patients come to the center and what kind of problems do surgeons who work there typically encounter?
Initially it was almost all orthopedic surgery. And then when I started going down, we started doing general surgery such as gallbladders, hernias. Now ENT trips go down, GYN trips go down. And so they do a variety of different surgical procedures. I don't do hernias and gallbladders here, and I was very interested in doing oncology surgery. And so we started now over the last several years of just doing oncology surgery. So we do a lot of breast cancer, thyroid cancer, skin cancer, things that can be done in an outpatient surgery center.
I guess I also want to know, is there a permanent staffing at this facility, or is it always being run by rotating teams of groups that come out there, such as the team that you led?
This is the beauty of this place. The director of the surgery center now is a Honduran orthopedic surgeon who grew up as an orphan on this orphanage. And he was inspired by Dr. Daly, who is the orthopedic surgeon from St. Paul. And now he is the medical director of this facility, which is located where he grew up. The main nurse who co-runs the facility also grew up as an orphan on the orphanage. So it's really being run and led by Hondurans.
Which is a great way to lead into the next thing that I'm really curious about, which is how does this facility fit into the broader landscape of healthcare in Honduras? Like, what is healthcare overall like in Honduras, and how does the work of this facility and the surgeons who come from outside the country either augment or improve that situation?
The healthcare situation in Honduras is not very good. There is private insurance available and private health care available, but it's prohibitively expensive to the vast majority of the population. There is a public system in place, but it's quite limited because of access. And so it is the public system is overwhelmed by trauma. And if you have a non-traumatic medical problem, it can take a very long time to be seen. So we've seen breast cancer patients who have been waiting for surgery for over 4 months after their diagnosis. And often it took a few months to even go from a symptom to get a biopsy to get surgery. So that's a very long process. So I think that this particular organization fits in well for individuals who do not have immediate life-threatening illnesses, but still could be life-threatening illnesses, but just not immediate. And we can get them seen, treated, and taken care of in a relatively quick fashion.
What is it actually like to go there and do this? Like, how long does the team go for, and what is it like to actually live in such a different place for a little while and to see such different medical cases?
It's extraordinary. It's like camp for adults. It's so much fun, and it's so gratifying. So we usually go for a week, maybe 10 days. We fly to the capital. A bus picks us up at the airport. We drive about 45 minutes to the ranch, which is the orphanage. And this ranch is a 2,000-acre ranch. It looks like Montana. And we have any downtime, we'll go on hikes, but we'll see patients, and then we'll operate on them, and we'll usually operate till about 5 or 6 o'clock. And we walk back to our living quarters, which is a beautiful walk, and we'll play with the orphans and hang out with the orphans and have dinner with the orphans. And then after dinner, we'll play cards, or we'll have a karaoke contest, and then go to bed and do it all over again.
That does sound really great. I want to talk a little bit about the team now itself. We've talked about how obviously you're not going by yourself. You're taking a team with you. Many of the people on the team are residents, so surgeons who are still in training. What do they get out of a trip like this, and how do they contribute overall to the mission of the trip itself?
It's been extremely valuable for them to learn how to take care of surgical patients when you have limited resources and when patients have more advanced diseases than we're used to seeing here in the United States. I probably would not be doing this work if I could not train individuals. So now we bring college students, medical students, residents, nurses from our institution come, nursing students, anesthesia, sometimes children will come. I've brought all three of my children to this on this trip, and we find work for them to do. I've even had friends who have absolutely nothing to do with medicine come, and they help clean rooms and help sterilize equipment. And it's been, the team building is phenomenal.
I think you make a great case that from a medical point of view, this is excellent training, especially like you said, under difficult circumstances, limited resources. What about the social aspect? I mean, so for medical students or for students who think about going into medicine or maybe even residents to work in a different country and to also to socialize with people such as the orphans, how does that aspect of the experience contribute to their training as aspiring medical professionals?
It's very unique. The whole situation with the orphanage is a uniquely different experience, because you're really seeing children, you're seeing people who were born in poverty and how many of them have come out of it with how they've gotten out of poverty through hard work and through an orphanage system that has been extraordinarily successful. I like the training aspect because we bring so many different layers of trainees down, from high school students to college students to medical students to residents to staff like myself, and everybody can learn from each other. And I will always pair people up so that the high school students were the college students were the medical students, and so on. So it's not just me mentoring everyone. Everybody is mentoring each other. So it's an extraordinarily enriching experience. And there's no distractions. So when you're in Honduras, you don't worry about, do I need to get home for my son's soccer game, or I'm going to meet my friends to go out, or I've got some other work to do. You're there, and it's all 100% dedicated, and you don't feel that. You don't feel any outside distractions.
You originally said that you were looking for an opportunity to help your own children understand that the world is bigger than Edina, as you put it. And you said that they've gone with you on this trip. So what has been the effect on them of going on this trip? Has it had the desired effect? And so, like, how have they responded to the experience of going with their dad?
It's been great for them. What my three children have all done when they went down there is they have a system where you sponsor a child, and sometimes it's kind of like a godfather situation. My children were always served as either a big brother or a big sister to these children who live in the orphanage. And as a result, every time I go back, which is every 6 months, I see these kids. I bring them letters. They bring me letters. We talk. We take pictures. I show pictures of my kids on my phone. We take a bunch of pictures. I send them back. We have a good internet access down there. We will FaceTime with my children while with their younger brother or sister, younger or Honduras brother or sister. So it's been extraordinary.
Sounds like these orphans definitely have, you know, like a broader network of friends now because of the work that you and your team are doing. Since the facility sees patients from the community and the surrounding area, what is it like for the patients to be able to actually come to the center and to get the care that they need here?
If you had this clinic in the United States, there'd be an uproar because the patients often have to take a bus in. They will, or their family members will have to take them, and they can often wait for a long time before we see them. So they may be waiting outside for a long period of time before we are actually able to see them. So it can be. To me, it would be very frustrating in our American system. But there, they don't complain at all. They wait in line. They're grateful to be seen. They almost always say glory be to God after seeing you because they're so happy and grateful. And then they get on a bus and go home often after surgery. And I think one of the main messages I've always received from this experience is that how grateful they are, and if you had to drive to Southdale and your doctor was 15-20 minutes later and you just late, you would think, oh my God, this is the worst thing that could ever possibly happen to me. And then you drive home in your Lexus and say, oh my God, this is terrible. This experience has really, right now in medicine, one of the major issues right now is physician burnout. Physicians feel like they're overworked, they're doing too much bureaucratic stuff. They've lost their enthusiasm for medicine. And this is the anti-burnout remedy. And it's just it's just pure medicine. Strip away the bureaucracy, strip away the money issue, strip away the insurance, and it's just you and a patient, and you and your team and a patient taking care of their problem. And it's very uplifting.
Since this is the situation that you have with people sometimes traveling long distances, relatively long distances to come see you, and also because your team is there for such a short amount of time, do you get to follow up with any of the patients to see how they're doing? I was just wondering how, like here in the U.S., that's an obvious thing. The surgeon is constantly involved in the aftermath of the operation. How does that work in a setting like this?
It's important, especially important in a developing country like Honduras, that you just don't cut and run. Do the operation, leave, and have no follow-up plan. What's unique and nice about this program is we have an orthopedic surgeon there who sees all of our patients after we leave. And then for patients who, for instance, a mastectomy patient or a thyroid cancer patient, we'll be back in 6 months to see them for any long-term follow-up. And so I think I think the system, although not perfect, provides very good follow-up, both in the short-term and long-term care.
Dr. Todd Tuttle, thanks so much for joining us today and talking about your trip to Honduras.
Thank you.
Scrubs, Scalpels, and Stories is a podcast of the University of Minnesota Department of Surgery and is produced by Amanda Brower. Our audio tech is Brian Carnell. I'm medical historian David Korostyshevsky. Join us next time on Scrubs, Scalpels, and Stories.